Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening. Children lined up for lunch in the cafeteria of a Christian school. At the head of the table was a large pile of apples. The teacher made a note, "Take only one, God is watching." At the other end of the table was a large pile of chocolate chip cookies. A boy wrote a note, "Take all you want, God's watching the apples." We're going to do a follow-up to a message I did 2 weeks ago about lust of the flesh. And we covered seven dangers of the lust of the flesh. One, they are evil in their character. Two, they are deceitful in their appearance. Three, they are varied in their manifestation. Four, they're fleeting in their enjoyment. Five, they're hurtful in their embrace. Six, they're personal in their origin. And seven, they are captivating in their influence. These dangers are very real, and we must beware, Christians, because the devil is ever ready to tempt us, and he knows exactly where to tempt us. He knows where we're weak. He knows better than you do where you're weak. He has made a science of studying you, and he wants to destroy your influence for the Lord. So beware that we not be deceived and fall. Well, we've considered the seven dangers. I want to consider some things from the Bible that illustrate people that have succumbed to these temptations and these lusts. And obviously, each one of these could be a study within itself. But I want to put them together so that you get a composite picture here of the dangers of the lust of the flesh. We must remember as we go through these different scenarios, we're no different from these people. We're just like that. We are just as vulnerable. God did not give us these stories in the Bible so we can condemn these people. He said, no, it's a warning to you. Most of these I'm sure you're familiar with to some degree or another. Genesis chapter 3, verse 6, we have here the story of Eve. What was her temptation? Yes, take of the forbidden fruit, but even more, live apart from God. Make your own decisions. You're not going to let God tell you what to do. And yet God was very clear what Adam and Eve's instructions were concerning that forbidden fruit. Of course, then Satan comes on the scene and deceives. And remember this. It's called first mention principle, if you want a technical term. The first thing that you start to read in the Bible about something, God starts, okay, I'm going to tell you about Satan. And then through the rest of the Bible, he builds on that and tells you more and more. It's called first mention principle. The first thing you read in the Bible from the beginning about a subject is the most important thing God wants you to know about it. And what is the first thing he wants us to know about the devil? He is more subtle than any beast of the field. Which takes us right to this study, the lust of the flesh. He's going to try to deceive us, and he is the world's greatest salesman. He can present garbage and we buy it. Because he makes it look so good. And this is what he did to Eve. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, now it wasn't. God said, don't eat of it. And that it was pleasant to the eye and the tree to be desired to make one wise, she took the fruit thereof and did eat and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. Now, obviously, there's a whole lot we could cover there. But I want us to focus on the whole thing, the simple thing that Eve succumbed to the temptation. I'm not going to do it God's way. I am going to take of this. And so it is. Do you realize the importance of Genesis chapter 3? If you take that out of the Bible, you have lost the whole foundation of sin and the need of a Savior. How did sin enter this world? It is very important that we never, ever lose sight of the importance of Genesis, even the beginning. Did we really evolve? Isn't it kind of funny? The first thing he wanted us to know is he created everything. And Satan is even attacking that through evolution. Oh, that people would heed the warnings about sin. Do you understand what Adam and Eve did? Here we are some 8,000 years later. 9,000 years, whatever. But we're not millions of years old. Their sin still affects us today. Please take a look at Romans chapter 8, verse 22. Paul writes this, "We know that the whole creation, everything, groans and travails in pain together until now." Even up to his day. This whole world is suffering because of sin of two people back in the garden. When we succumb to temptation, do you realize how we affect other people? The Bible tells us the sins of the fathers will visit to the children to the third and the fourth generation. My sins will affect my great-grandson. Now, that doesn't mean if I rob a bank, he's going to jail. But it means if I'm not the man I ought to be, and there are, of course, areas in everybody's life where they falter, he'll pick up on that to the fourth generation. That's frightening how we're going to have an effect on future generations. So it is sin. Imagine a car running on a flat tire. The whole car is affected. That's how it is with this life. Eve wanted to do things apart from God, and here we are today. When you get to heaven, you will know Adam and Eve. They're the two sitting over there with their face in their hands. Please don't ask. You know, everybody that's come up here has asked, why did you do that? So number one, Eve wanted to operate apart from God. How about this one? We're going to see here men who have lusted after the daughters of men. Genesis chapter 2, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives, all which they chose. Now this passage is written as we're getting the introduction to Noah's flood. And the world was wicked. Wicked. And God saw it was so wicked, he's going to spare 8 people, Noah and his family. The rest of the world will be destroyed. And some of the things that they discuss here in this chapter 6 are the signs of the wickedness. And by the way, the Bible tells us, as in the days of Noah, so shall be the second coming of man when Christ comes back. You read the account before the flood, what led up to the flood, and that's what it's going to be like when Christ returns. Not for the church, but the second time, at the end of the tribulation. But we're certainly going to see the signs called the birth pangs. That the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and took them wives, all which they choose. Now, this is an interesting passage. What does this mean? Aren't they supposed to take daughters and marry them? Well, obviously, in the context, the Bible is telling us that this is an unnatural union. Something's wrong here. And don't read too deep into it. It's right in front of you. The sons of God, listen to me, the sons of God should be looking for the daughters of God, not the daughters of men. He's using some figurative speech here. And this is what it was, is mankind at that time was so wicked they didn't even want to remember God. The sons of God. He was pleased with them, but here they are. They're his children. And now, what are you looking to marry the daughters of men? Why don't you want to marry, like, your sons of God? Why don't you want a daughter of God? And this was the problem. They weren't worried about spirituality. Rather, boy, is she pretty. I want to marry her. Matter of fact, I want you to consider this unnatural union. Verse 3, and the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man. He has just cited this unnatural union, why a son of God would want to marry a daughter of men. He says, I don't want to strive with man anymore, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. Used to be men lived 900 years. Then it came down to 120 years, and now it's 80 years, 70 or 80 years for us today. So it is the sons of God should have been desiring the things of God, but instead, what did they do? They wanted the things of this world. 3, longing for the wrong place. Abraham obeyed God, went to the promised land, but he took his nephew Lot, which he wasn't supposed to do, and Lot and Abraham had a great division. And Abraham, to have peace, he said, Lot, whatever you want, what land do you want? You go there, and I'll go another place, and we'll live in peace apart from each other. And Lot cast his eyes on Sodom and Gomorrah. Genesis chapter 13, verse 10, and Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. It was before that. And he saw it was a beautiful place, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest to Zoar. He wanted this beautiful land. Don't you think he should have had the respect to say, Uncle Abraham, you're the one that got the calling. You're the one that got the covenant. You choose. I'll take less. What's left? He didn't. Oh, good. I want that. He went there. It was a town of great immorality. Homosexuality prevailed. He even became one of the rulers of the town. They say the expression in those days was he sat in the gate. He was one of their leaders in a wicked city. God brought great judgment on the town, Sodom and Gomorrah. And they fled. Condensing the story, the cities were destroyed. They were in a cave. And because he made one choice, I want to go over there. His daughters were with him in the cave. His wife was turned to a pillar of salt because she looked back. And here is Lot and his two daughters, grown daughters. And the two daughters talk to each other and say, you know what? We need to have a race of people come from our father. Let's get him drunk, and tonight I'll be with him, and tomorrow night let's get him drunk, and you be with him, and we'll have children by him. You talk a sick union. All because Dad made a decision. I want to go live where they're immoral. I don't care. It's okay. It's beautiful. Be careful of the lusts of the flesh. It was beautiful. God tells us it was beautiful. That doesn't make it good. How about this one? A selfish desire resulting in sexual abuse. Jacob had 12 sons and one daughter. Her name was Dinah. We know very little about Dinah, but what we do know about Dinah was very powerful and profound. Genesis chapter 34, and one Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, Dinah. He took her, lay with her, and defiled her. Now, how did she get in that position? That's where we're at here. What temptation brought her to that downfall? Genesis chapter 34, verse 1. Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. That's all I want to do. I just want to go out and see what the world's like. I don't want to partake. I just want to see it. Be careful, little eyes, what you see. And she got out there, and she didn't intend, but this prince sees her. And we don't know the detail per se on how it all happened. We know that it happened. It ended up in her defilement. You had no business desiring to go look at the world. We don't need to go learn what the world's all about. We walk in the world every day. We see enough. We don't have to make a conscious effort to explore their sinful ways. Very sad. Her desire was simple but potent, fraught with danger. She desired to see the things of the world. I just want to go see it. She had no intention. Folks, be careful where you go with your simple desire. Does this not take us back to the sons of God saw the daughters of men? An unnatural, except it was backwards. She was the daughter of Jacob, the one whose name's going to be changed to Israel. What are you doing? Looking for the sons of men and the daughters and looking for the world. Don't do that. A little temptation brought a great downfall. Number 5, a perverted desire. We already saw this in Sodom and Gomorrah with Lot. Jacob had 12 sons, 4 women, 2 wives, 2 concubines. Now here's how I explain a concubine. It's a name, so it's not really sin. She's really a concubine. Well, what's concubine? Well, you know. No, I don't know. Well, it's not a baby, it's a fetus. And we play with words. He has two wives and two women, two concubines. Those women bore him children, ultimately. Genesis 35:22, it came to pass when Israel, that's Jacob, dwelt in that land, that Reuben, one of his sons, went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine. That's sick. That's sick. Perverted. He had a perverted desire. Why? I don't know why. It doesn't tell us why. All we know is he was wrong. And he did not resist the temptation. Apparently she gave in to it. We see no resistance listed. We simply see the act occurred. And Israel heard it. There it is. What a disastrous family Jacob established. But what can you expect from your son when you have two women you call your wife, two women you call concubines, and you expect your son to understand a healthy, God-honoring marriage? Yoo-hoo! Anybody in there? Yes, Reuben was very wrong, and the guilt lay completely with him and with her. But I wonder if Jacob would have had one wife. Jacob had unnatural desires, and so did his son Reuben. And these are God's people. Number six, a self-righteous desire. Another one of the children of Israel, or Jacob, was Judah. Now he's the one ultimately will be the bloodline of Messiah. Judah had apparently, if you read the story, it seems like he was the one that could lead the brothers. Well, he's ultimately going to sell his brother into slavery, and he's also going to get into harlotry. Genesis chapter 38, verse 2. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, and he took her and went in unto her. And that was in harlotry. He had to pay. And he did it. Great sin. Let's take a look at another great sin of Judah. Chapter 37, verse 26. And Judah said to his brethren, what profit is we if we slay our brother Joseph and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Let not our hand be upon him. So if you put those in chronological order, he has no qualms selling his brother into slavery, causing his father great heartache. He knows his brother is going into slavery, and he can take a harlot. No problem. And he can sleep because you know why? He's self-righteous. We're rid of this kid. Get my brother out of here. And he seemed to get away with his sin for a time, but one of the things that does come to Judah's favor, he ultimately confessed. Albeit, he had to be confronted by the harlot publicly. Condensing the story, he had to give her a token that he would come back with the money. And they assembled, and she said, because she was pregnant, she said, the man who owns this. And Judah said, you're right, it's me. He acknowledged, and he said in his acknowledgement, you don't have it, Genesis 38:26, she hath been more righteous than I. Now, it's a shame it took that to get him to a confession, but some people will never confess. What about his brother? Sequence of events occurred. Joseph actually becomes the prime minister, the second in command of all Egypt. And the brothers have to go down for food. Through a sequence of events, they do not know that it is Joseph hiding behind an Egyptian garb and the Egyptian language, and they're talking. And Judah says, we're guilty. You can write this down. It's Genesis 44:16. And Judah said, what shall we say unto my Lord? What shall we speak? They're now in front of Joseph, but they don't know it's him. Or how shall we clear ourselves? God hath found out the iniquity of thy servants. We did it. We're guilty. It's me. It's us. This is what Joseph was looking for. Have my brothers changed, or are they still a bunch of arrogant sinners? And he realized, the ringleader, he's changed. He admits, and he cannot forget what he did to me. Number 7, seduction. When Joseph was sold into slavery and brought down into Egypt, he was purchased by a man named Potiphar. And he became a servant, slave in his house, and he was promoted to be the head of the house. And one day, when the house was empty, it was Joseph and Potiphar's wife, and she tempted him, lie with me. And he said, no, I will not do that. This woman had power over him. He was the slave. She was the master, the wife of the master. She was an Egyptian. He was a Hebrew. She had influence. And he would not give in to. She had an unnatural desire for him, a godless desire. He had a desire to do what's right. Can you also, though, imagine the temptation that could have gone through Joseph's mind? Well, this is a cheap way I can get back at Potiphar. I don't have to put up with this. Can you not see him? We know that from the story, he was sold into slavery at 17 years of age. He has a natural desire. He could have given in to these temptations. He didn't. He fled. And it put him in a prison cell. She wanted him. He wanted God. His desire was natural. And he was the guy that got thrown in jail. Sometimes you're going to face things when you desire to do things God's way, and some fool is opposing you somehow, some way, and you wonder, dear God, why is that lady free, still in the house, and I'm in prison? I haven't done anything. That would be a natural thing for Joseph to say and to think. But he trusted God. Guess what? He didn't have much choice. Your choice is trust God or don't. God was pleased with Joseph, and we know the rest of this story. Number 8, how about Samson and his insatiable quest for women? Genesis 16:4, it came to pass afterward that he, Samson, loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. Now we can see other places where he desired women, but this is the most famous. This is the conclusion of his life, where he just had to have Delilah. Even though she was telling the truth, where's your strength? Where's your strength? And he was letting this temptation for her bring him nigh unto death. And he would tell her a lie. Here's how you can make me weak. And then she would try it. And he was so foolish, so blinded by his sin, he kept telling her more. Go ahead. And he didn't ever figure out, this lady's trying to destroy me. Just like someone who's on drugs. Can't you figure out every time you get feeling lousy or you go into the hospital or something, is there anybody in there? It's telling you, I'm trying to destroy you. He should have been delivering Israel from the Philistine bondage. That was his purpose from God. But he was blinded by his desire. And so it is. He finally told Delilah, it's my hair. Now the truth is there's nothing, last time I checked, there's no strength in your hair. But he was a Nazirite. And it was symbolic of his vow. I will not cut my hair. That's where it was. It was in his relationship with God. He wasn't desiring that to fulfill what God called him to do. Rather, he was chasing women. And so it is. What happened? Judges chapter 16, verse 21, and the Philistines took him and put out his eyes. Did you know that Samson saw better without his eyes than with them? And brought him down to Gaza, and bound him with fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house because he would not resist the temptation. We all know the story, David and Bathsheba, chapter 11, verse 2. And it came to pass in the eventide that David arose from off his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house. Why aren't you out in the battlefield with the soldiers where you belong? Why are you napping in the afternoon when the kingdom needs a leader? Why are you busy looking down at a lady's house? And why was she out there? And from the roof he saw a woman washing herself. Why are you bathing there? It goes on to tell us that she was actually purified in the spiritual sense of the law. Really? You're purified, letter of the law, and you're bathing in public, basically. There's a problem here. And it caused David temptation, but he put himself in a place where he ought not have been. He was in a bad place, Bathsheba was in a wrong place, and both of them succumbed to the lust. Rather than resisting, two people got together. Oh, well, why don't you kill my husband? At the death of David, Adonijah had a lust for the power of being king, even though it was rightly assigned to Solomon. 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 5, then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. But good people knew that wasn't David's intent. He wanted Solomon. God wanted Solomon to be the next leader. And good people stood up to this man's wicked desire. And you can read this in 1 Kings, where good people rose up and said, no, we're not going to let this happen. We know that Adonijah wants this. We know, though, that Solomon wants it. And this man caused a problem. He ran down and threw himself on the altar, at the horns of the altar. At one point, Solomon gave him grace. But then he asked, can I marry Abishag? There's a little bit more to this, but just take my word for it. That was a move politically where he could have started to weasel in again to get to the throne. Solomon saw right through it. You're not getting Abishag. And he sent a man down and kill him. No more grace. No more grace. How about a king's desire for a vineyard? 1 Kings chapter 21. Verse 1, it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard, which was in Jezreel, hard by the place of Ahab, king of Samaria. It's near the king's palace. He has a vineyard. And Ahab spake to Naboth, give me thy vineyard, that I may have it for thy garden of herbs, because it's near my house. I will give thee for a better vineyard. He already has a better vineyard, but, you know, the kings really don't have all that much stuff, right? This man had everything he wanted. I will give thee a better vineyard, or if it seem good, I'll give thee money for the worth of it. He lusted after this property. Now, we're not told a whole lot about this, but we do know it's a lot of the vineyard from his family. And were not the children of Israel divided up into different lands and they got their own allocation of property? And this had gone to Naboth, and he doesn't want to sell it. And so the king goes and pouts. And his wife, she comes and says, what's the matter with you? You're the king. I can't get his vineyard. Well, that's no problem. She went out. She got some people to lie about it, said this man blasphemes. They stoned him to death. She came back and said, vineyard's yours. An innocent man died because the king had anything he wanted, but he wanted more. He didn't control himself from the temptation, I want that vineyard. And an innocent man died. Number 12, lust for monetary wealth. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 9. But they that will be rich, they desire, they set out to be wealthy. I am going to climb the corporate ladder, whatever it takes. If you do that, you fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. If you lust after money and wealth, you will suffer. Quote, It is good to have what is necessary. More than that breeds anxiety. Let us leave the provision for our needs with God. He has pledged to give food and covering, the latter which covers shelter. Not money, but the love of it opens the sluices and floodgates of the soul, through which wash the destroying waters of passion that drown men in destruction and perdition. Remember that you can carry nothing out of this world except your character. It's interesting that Paul started with the remedy before the problem. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6, but godliness with contentment is great gain. He's setting forth the principle. For we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. Having food and raiment, let us wherewith be content. Because if you start searching for wealth, it's going to be a frustration. And he puts the answer, the solution, the warning, seek this, it's good. And then he gives the warnings, if we seek that which we ought not. Resist the temptation for the wealth of the world. We naturally as believers, as people, seek lustful things. It's natural. We have to learn and grow in the Lord to be able to resist them. Ephesians 2:1, and you, Paul writes to these believers at Ephesus, hath he quickened, born again, who were dead in trespasses and sins. Now, wherein in times past, before you were saved, you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince and the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, among whom, before you were saved, you were among these people. We had our conversation, our living behavior in times past, in the lusts of our flesh. That's all an unsaved person knows to do, is to satisfy the lusts of the flesh. And once you get born again, and you have a Holy Spirit to guide you, you need to mature and stop seeking the things in the lust of the flesh. Rather, seek the things of God, and therein you will be blessed. And you'll be spared from a lot of heartache, because godliness with contentment is great gain.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.